Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
If you're listening to this show live, right now I'm off of Bermuda aboard the NCL Breakaway. This is a special Caesars 7-star cruise. When they originally announced an August special cruise back in February, I had recently gone through a divorce and wasn't seeing anybody, so I didn't sign up for it. When I started to see Bonnie a few months later, I asked if there are any replacement cruises for their 7-star guests, and it turns out there was one in September, which had already sold out, and this one in October. So Bonnie and I are going to in Bermuda. Now, I don't want to pay shipboard telephone rates for an hour show, so we're taping this show a week and a half early. For this reason, we aren't going to be discussing gambling news, simply because a whole lot could have changed in the 10 days between when we tape it and when you're hearing the show. For similar reasons, we're not doing commercials tonight. This morning, the guest Richard and I were planning to have on the show bailed for personal reasons. That leaves Richard and me as the only ones here. So we decided to share some of the interesting stories in our respective careers that we haven't spoken about on the radio yet. Recently, I wrote that I used to do scouting work for Ameristar Casinos. Some of the absolute best promotions I ever run across were being when paid to scout, either by Ameristar or by Stanford Wong. I'm going to tell you about some of those. The first time this happened to me was back in 1994 when I was a scout for Stanford Wong's Current Blackjack News. Every month I would go around to all the casinos on my route and record how many games there were, number of decks, penetration, special rules, etc. I came across two different specials for me to exploit. How good a play it is partly depends on your bankroll. I had come to Vegas less than a year before, and my entire wealth when I came was $6,000, and I had to support myself and somebody else on that as well. Needless to say, good low roller plays were all I could deal with. One of the plays I found was at Treasure Island, and it was for the entire month of some month, and I found out about it more than halfway through the month, but still with a week and a half to go. The promotion was every time you emptied a hopper, they would pay you $20. Now, these were coin dropping machines, so they would fill it up with $200 or $300 or $400 of quarters, and then when it got empty, they would come to fill it and they would give you a certificate worth $20. So my strategy was to, when I got there, to put a couple of $100 bills into the machine, play one or two hands, and then cash out. Now, and the coins go plump, plump, plump into the hopper, and I would dutifully put them into the plastic buckets. If this didn't empty it all out, I'd put in another 100 or two and hit the button again, and out it would come, and eventually the machine would go dry. They would come and fill up the machine and pay me my $20. And I would do this in three or four or five separate parts of the casino each trip. And because I didn't want the same floorman to come and pay me 8 different times or something all at the same time, that would begin to look obvious. So I find the corners of the casino and do it 3 or 4 or 5 times a shift. I'd go home, come back 8 hours later, do it again, come home, go home, come back, do it 8 hours later. This was worth between $250 and $300 a day for essentially zero risk. And for somebody with a low bankroll trying to build a bankroll up so they could stay in Vegas, this was a godsend. I'm not sure I had to, but I always played a hand or two before I cashed out. I wanted to be able to legitimately say, well, yeah, I was playing, and then something came up, so I had to go. So I was planning to play more. If I just put in the $100 bills and cashed out immediately, that and they looked at that on surveillance, that would be more suspicious than I wanted to look like. But in effect, that's what I was doing. All right. Now, there was another good low roller play I found.
You know what? Before you go on, Bob, I just want to say that that's a good example. So often these kinds of things get ruined because people do things that are just stupid. And, you know, I can easily imagine people doing exactly what you're talking about, not even bothering to play a hand. And as soon as they get the $20, you know, just move to the machine next door and do the same thing over and over until the casino realizes exactly what it is they're doing. So, so often there are these really good money-making opportunities in casinos, and people just do not want to take any kind of swing at all or lay any kind of cover, and it just ruins the promotion. So, you know, I think it's instructive for our listeners to keep that in mind. You know, there's nothing wrong with giving up a little bit of EV to lay some cover and let something last longer.
And an interesting part of that is it's different if you live here, which I did, and wanted to keep coming back again and again and again, or maybe you're a tourist and this is your last day in town. And so you didn't really care what happened. You just wanted to get what you could while it was there. So I could, so there's different amounts of cover you lay if you're a tourist than if you're a local.
That's true. But even if you were a tourist, you know, you could play a little bit, collect your $20, move to a different area of the casino. Even, you know, even do it on a slot machine. A nickel slot machine can't hold that much money, right, if you pump in $100 or whatever.
Yes.
You know, and just keep moving around to different areas of the casino, you're going to last a lot longer than, you know, if you just sit there and have the same change person coming every 5 minutes to pay you $20.
Agreed. Another really good play I found while scouting for Stanford Wong was at Vacation Village. This was a barn-size building on Las Vegas Boulevard, right at the base of Sunset. They would give you coupons for every four of a kind. For a quarter machine, which is what I was playing at the time, was worth $1.25. And they had half-hourly drawings where the expected return, if you were called, was about $60. One of the drums was strictly for play between 2 a.m. and 7 a.m., and the entries had to be dated the same day. So I would show up at midnight and start earning tickets. There were 11 drawings of two names each, and sometimes I'd be called 9 or 10 times. There's not many people in this drawing, and so 9 or 10 times, where it's worth $60 a piece, is pretty good money. You could certainly lose on the play, but it was 25 cents, 10-7 double bonus, which is a game very slightly positive all by itself with some swings, but the coupon is worth you know, $1.25 every four of a kind. So probably the game was worth $3 an hour or something. But the drawings were worth a whole bunch more. So for whatever reason, they let me do this almost every night for a year and a half. My bankroll increased for about $200,000 for this one play over and over and over again until they stopped it. I don't imagine they would let anybody do that again today. There, I mean, that casino wouldn't. It's gone. But
yeah, well, that was part of the difference. I mean, they didn't have the kind of tracking that they do nowadays.
Well, it's the same person.
Cards and,
it's the same person.
I'm still surprised that they didn't realize you were winning the thing eight times in a night over and over and over.
Well, they did. The same, you know, shift boss worked, you know, 5 days a week, and she would call the names and, you know, Bob Dancer or whatever name I was using, and I would come up. So she certainly knew who I was. She certainly knew that I was winning, and she got tipped $5 every time that I collected something. I didn't know what the appropriate tip was, but I did know that I wanted to keep winning $500 or $600 or $700 a week. So she got $5 every time. She was happy with the deal.
And did you say your bankroll went from 6,000 or something up to 100 during this period?
No, I said it went from 6,000 on this one play. It was over 200,000 gain. So it was a many, many, many fold increase. The on this play alone, there were other things happening, including the Treasure Island or something. So in that 1 year, I was probably a $400,000 year for me.
Wow.
Back in 94, which was for somebody who started with a bankroll of $6,000. This was big money.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was very, very fortunate. I was fortunate when I moved to Vegas that I had a job. So because I do have several friends that, like you, came with very little money. You know, back in the late 70s, there was a place, a kitty corner from the Sahara called the Cover Girl. They would serve a free breakfast and had topless dancers in there. My friend,
which was more
Darryl,
appealing,
likes to say that with the free breakfast and the topless dancers, it was probably still the price was too high for what you were getting. Yeah, I had a job, so I didn't have to go really, grind, pick up the freebies and stuff like that as much. But I remember the first big promotion that I played, there was a casino called the Rainbow Club in Henderson. And
on Water Street, it's still there.
Yeah, yeah. Now I don't remember where I heard about the promotion. This would have been about 1980 or so. And it's possible that it was in Wong's, current Blackjack News or something. And I have to say, a lot of people really disparage Wong for ruining a lot of good promotions by publishing them. But they also forget that there were times where they got in on promotions that they wouldn't have known about if it hadn't been for, Wong's newsletter.
Yes.
So anyway, the Rainbow Club was having some big anniversary, and all I knew was they were giving 2-1 on blackjack. So, I rushed out there on a Saturday, and I'm there playing blackjack. And they also had something going on roulette, but I don't remember exactly what it was. It was positive EV, but the blackjack was better. But I think it was only a $50 or $100 maximum bet.
$100 so max bet is pretty big at the Rainbow.
Yeah. but anyway, I start hearing a lot of screaming from the crap table and look over and see Stanford Wong and David Sklansky and, several other people that I knew were all playing craps. And I figured, well, I don't know what's going on, but it's got to be better than the blackjack if they're all over at the crap table.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing, you know, it was something ludicrous like paying 3-2 on 7s and 11s or something like that. You know, so whatever the edge was, it was bigger than the blackjack edge, and we stayed there all day playing. And when they finally called it off, you know, everybody immediately stopped playing and went and lined up at the cashier's cage, and they didn't have enough money to pay everybody. You know, people had to leave with the chips, and eventually they did get cashed, but I don't know what the loss was, but it was big. But you know, one of the things that was really instructive about that particular promotion to me was actually the response of one of my teammates. Two of the members of my team had I guess at some point I had run off to a payphone and called them and said, "Get down here." But one of the members of the team basically argued that we should not get credit for our hours because we weren't counting cards. And, you know, this argument was ludicrous given that our EV was much higher playing this promotion than it would have been for counting cards. But I think he just did not like seeing his hours get diluted in the bank. You know, because we all had this full day of playing and we're getting hours for it.
But you're also getting a lot of bank money. I mean, it was a lucrative day for the team.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, our first response was, okay, well, that's fine. So this action was ours? And he was like, no, you know, the money should go in the bank, but you shouldn't get any hours for it. And anyway, so what I realized is that when you team up with people, eventually people's character gets revealed. And there are some people who you're going to find are not interested in the good of the team. They're interested in their own self-interest. And, you know, it's just something you have to be aware of. And you know, nowadays, that's a big factor in choosing who I do business with.
So if somebody,
you know, I'm always interested in what's the most fair for everyone involved, as opposed to, you know, what's going to give me the biggest paycheck.
So when somebody screws you once like this, is that it for ever trusting them again, or is
well,
it
you
possible
know what? I mean, the other thing that I realized is actually I had a really close friend who said to me, you know, you can trust different people with different things. So there are some people you can trust with your money or your, you know, around your booze, but you can't trust them with your wife, you know, or there are other people that you can trust with your wife or your, you know, money, but you can't trust them around your liquor or whatever.
Interesting.
And so anyway, I realized that some people could be my friends, but not my business partners. So I don't get angry about it. I just realize, oh, you know, this is somebody I don't want to do business with anymore.
Well, good. And it was actually, as it goes, reasonably inexpensive to find out this information about that.
Well,
person.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, he got voted down. So we, of course, got hours for the play that we had. But yeah, when money, you know, I often found that problems on teams can start with big wins just as well as big losses. Because when teams start making a lot of money, the greed comes out. And eventually everyone's character is revealed.
Yes, you'd like somebody else to learn the lessons on the bad one, but it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to my scouting days. I was scouting for Ameristar back in February 2004. Shirley and I spent 2 weeks checking out Ameristar casinos in their competition from Council Bluffs, Iowa, through Kansas City, Missouri, to St. Charles, which is next to St. Louis, Missouri, down to Vicksburg, Mississippi. It happened we got to Vicksburg on a Tuesday afternoon. what had formerly been a Harrah's Casino in Vicksburg. It had gotten sold and rebranded Horizon. And they were having a lot of grand opening specials. It happened that Wednesdays from midnight to midnight, they had double royal promotions, which means instead of getting $1,000 for a quarter royal, you got $2,000, or instead of getting $20,000 for a $5 royal, you got $40,000. We didn't have a lot of money with us, but so we could have played the $5 game, but it would have been a stretch if we didn't hit the royal pretty quick. But they had 100 play quarters for 9-6 jacks. This is a 99.5% game. And with double royals, it's about 101.8. And you include a slot club and mailers and blah, blah, blah. And it's well over 2% edge on a $125 a hand game. This is juicy. There was a machine open. This was, we found it at about 6 o'clock at night, the day before the promotion started. So Shirley stayed at the machine playing NSU, which is a 99.7 game. She was playing, I think, 10 hands at quarters. On a 100-play game, you can play any number of lines at full value. You don't need to play all 100 lines. So she was playing maybe 10. She could have been playing one because the casino had the edge, but that was too boring for her. So she was playing 10. And then at midnight, I was back having reviewed the strategy and ready to go for many, many hours straight. And when I got back, surprisingly, both machines were open. So Shirley kept on the machine she was playing, but now played 125 a hand. And I played the other machine. She lasted a couple hours, then she had to go to sleep, and I lasted till 8 in the morning when I had to quit because of, there was an exit interview with Ameristar, and we had a flight to catch home. I don't exactly remember why we had to leave that day, but it was not an option. I suggested we stay a day later, or at least I stay, and I was vetoed. Shirley did have a good veto. So we were under royaled, but still up $6,000 or $7,000 on the play. This is a sweet deal. Just something we would not have seen. This was 2,000 miles away from where we live, and the only reason we're there is because Ameristar wanted us to check out the machines. So it happened that they were having it again the next week. Now, we could not get back to Ameristar the next week. It happened that I was beginning teaching classes on Tuesday and flying out there. I couldn't get there by Wednesday comfortably. So we told a friend and his wife about it, and they went. And they indeed went to, they drove to wherever they did and got there about 6 o'clock Tuesday afternoon, and they started playing. They figured they had to get there 6 hours early or the machines would be locked up. Good thing they did. Half hour later, somebody's tapping them on the shoulder. Do you plan to be playing for long? And it was a polite, and they go, well, we just really don't know, but likely we're going to be here a long time. So the wife played, and the husband went, slept, blah, blah, blah. Got ready. He came back at midnight, and they played. They played until 8 a.m. when the manager came in, and he goes, I told you guys these machines were not eligible for the promotion, so nobody gets another promotion on this one. So my friends hadn't had any royals all night long. They were down a couple thousand. Guy on the other machine had maybe 10 or 11 royals, so he was way up. And but my friends recognized it as a juicy gift that I had given them, and they've done several nice things for me since then. It happened they lost money on it, but they still recognized that it was a gift to know about it.
Yeah, well, that's the important thing. You know, the important thing, I think, is that the value of having friends that you communicate with, you know, in this business. So, you know, you turn them on to something quite lucrative. I'm sure in the you know, they've turned you on to things. Because that's one of the questions I get asked is, how do you find these things? And we've talked about this a little in the past, but, you know, one of the things I do is scour, you know, the news and the things that are written about what's going on. I also find that there's a lot more of this going on out in the rest of the country. I think Vegas has been spanked too many times. They realize that, boy, they just open the door a little and, you know, the wise guys are going to come crashing through it. And but, you know, a casino out in the middle of, you know, Iowa, they haven't been spanked so much. So you're much more likely to find some really, really juicy opportunity in some of these places than you are in Vegas, I think, these days.
That's exactly true.
And certainly there are people who, you know, just spend their time on the road going from place to place looking for these kind of opportunities. You know, it's too hard to just try to make your living counting cards nowadays. But, you know, these one good promotion can just make your year. As I was saying, something else I wanted to ask you. I mean, how do you nowadays feel about spending 8 hours in a chair playing video poker? I mean, that sounds like torture to me.
Oh, it's very doable. Especially if I know the promotion's going to go away. I'm 66 years old, but I can still play that long. Usually on double point days at South Point, where it's a juicy game on quick quads, I usually limit myself to 4 or 5 hours. But if I didn't think any more double, you know, any more games are going to go out, and it was do it now or lose the opportunity, I, within the last year, have played some promotions 10 hours or 12 hours straight.
Wow. I had a friend who very early on got into playing progressive slots. And, you know, I did some playing with him back then. And, I mean, that was far worse because you had to hand feed the coins and actually pull a slot handle back then. But still, just the boredom factor. And, you know, it starts to bother my back and my arm and, you know. But, you know, even playing table games, you know, I have a friend who I refer to as the vampire because, you know, basically all he does is play and he'll sleep a few hours a night. You know,
he will sometimes
play 30 or 40 hours in a stretch if he's got good dealers. And, you know, he can just sit there forever. I guess I'm getting too old. I'm spoiled.
Well, the man on our show a couple months ago, we called him old timer, was known for regularly playing 20 to 40 hours on a video poker machine during promotions. The rest of us hated him because he would have a lot more drawing tickets than we ever had. So he always won. He talked about, oh yeah, the time I won my second Lexus, I was blah, blah, blah. We're ready to kill him. But, because none of us had won one Lexus at the time. But, oh well.
Yeah.
My final scouting super find while checking out machines for Ameristar happened in Gary, Indiana in June of 2007. Gary, Indiana is a blue-collar, high-crime city in northern Indiana, just east of Chicago. I don't know, 20 miles east? I don't know, something like that. Ameristar was going to be taking over what was then called a resorts casino in East Chicago, which is a city in Indiana immediately east of the Indiana-Illinois border. And they wanted to know what their competition was doing. So in addition to the two Majestic Star boats, I checked out the Horseshoe in Hammond and the recently opened Blue Chip in Michigan City. When you're scouting, you can't just go through the casino with a notepad and be writing stuff down. If you do, sooner or later, you're going to get a visit from a security officer wanting to know, what do you think you're doing? And this is more likely to be sooner than later. For some reason, the correct answer to this is that you're spying for the competition. This doesn't sit well with them. So you got to say something else, obviously. So when I'm scouting, I walk around for 10 minutes, seeing what I can find, memorize what it was, go into the bathroom and write stuff down, then go out, do another 10 minutes, go to another bathroom, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm assuming there are no cameras in a bathroom. Now, if there were, the casino wouldn't come out and tell you there were, because that would be all kinds of lawsuits. So,
well, they can't by law in Nevada. I mean, I'm sure the other states have laws too.
And well, whether they can or can't, and what they do is something. Anyway, so I'm always assuming it's safe in a bathroom, at least from casino security. So anyway, I was going through the Majestic Star, and I saw a single-line machine with a Progressive at $70,000 and change. This is a weird number for a Progressive. Now, $5 machine start at $20,000. To go from $20,000 to $70,000, that just doesn't happen. $10 machine start at $40,000. Well, it could happen that it started at $40,000 and had gone up to $70,000, but that would be pretty rare. So I got closer and I saw it was a $5 machine. And this was impossible to go up from $20,000 to $70,000 on a fair machine. So they had both 9.6 jacks on it, which starts out at 99.5%, and NSU, which starts out at 99.7%. Now, even though NSU is more valuable with a 4,000 coin royal, with a 14,000 coin royal, which is what it would be for $70,000, then a 9.6 jacks is better on the order of 106%. Plus a slot club, plus blah, blah, blah. So I sat down. Now, I didn't know the strategy exactly, but it doesn't much matter. This is a $1,200 an hour promotion, maybe. And if I mess up on the strategy and it's only $1,120 an hour, I'll take it. Going home to work out the exact strategy and possibly losing the machine to somebody else was way riskier. So I played as long as I could while still awake, and I didn't hit the royal. And I cashed out the machine at, I had $875 worth of credits on the machine when I cashed out. The next day when I got back there, about 9 hours later, the last person to play the machine had cashed out for $875. Now, I assume it was me. I don't know. It's kind of a weird number, and somebody else could have played and cashed out at that, but it's unusual. In Vegas, it is impossible that this kind of situation would go undiscovered for 9 hours. But in Gary, Indiana, it was very possible. So I started to play again. And the first thing I had to do is call up Shirley, who didn't come with me on the trip. She was back in Las Vegas for some reason. And so I had to tell her, number one, I might be a day or two late because I was going to be on this machine until it hit, if I possibly could. And number two, please be ready to wire me $20,000 if I didn't hit it today. Because I did have some money with me, but you're playing it, you're playing more aggressively for the Royal, which means you lose faster until you do hit the Royal. So Shirley was not real crazy about the idea of wiring me $20,000, but she trusted that I knew what I was doing, and so she agreed that I would call her if I needed the money, and she would go to Western Union and do it. Now I started to play, and as it turned out, some of my students showed up. These are not personal students, but they're people who, I mean, I haven't given them private lessons, but they've taken my class a number of times, and they live in the Chicago area, and they were just walking through the casino, but I'd become pretty good friends with them over the years, and so they wanted to know what I was doing. So I saw this as an opportunity that they were going to be my relief. Now, they normally play quarters. They did know how to play NSU or jacks or better, but they're quarter players. $5 single line is way out of their budget. And they don't want to deal with NSU, with W2Gs. So the deal was, if I hadn't hit it by 8 o'clock that night, they would use my money, play one quarter at a time, one $5 token at a time, slowly, do the best they could with NSU strategy, and I'd pay them $50 an hour to do it. Plus, I was going to give them $100 right now, just to, in case I did hit the Royal, just for agreeing to be my backup. This was going to guarantee that they came away with something. If I hadn't hit the Royal, then this was going to be their first 2 hours of wages. Now, $50 an hour is exceptionally high wages, and playing a $5 machine was pretty exciting, so they jumped at this. I didn't know anybody else in town I could trust, and I assumed I could trust them. I had reason to believe it, but you never know. I was going to hand them a couple $1,000s before I went to bed, and I assumed that they'd deal honorably with it, but I don't know. Anyway, turned out none of this was necessary. Soon after I called Shirley, I actually hit the 70,000 Royal. And so I called up Shirley saying, don't wire money. And I called up my friend saying, keep the $100. Thank you for being my backup, but I don't need it. And so it all worked out. Normally when the light starts blinking, people come over to your machine to check out what you've happened. In Gary, Indiana, they're not particularly curious. Maybe one or two people came over and looked, and they weren't particularly intrigued. They saw it was a Royal, but the fact that it was 70,000 didn't seem to go, oh, wow, you hit nothing.
That's
like
probably
that.
Better in Gary, Indiana. I
mean, it's
that's,
great.
You know.
I wanted to get out of Dodge as soon as I could.
Yeah.
So this was good. I'm glad that they didn't react like that and tell some of their buddies. But
although in Gary, Indiana, I probably would have taken a check.
I did. I definitely took a check in Gary, Indiana. And so on both, well, I Ford talks more. How about you, Richard? I've been monopolizing it so far. What do you have for us?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the best game I ever found, I can't really talk about, but I did find a game that was worth five figures an hour. You know, we played it, a group of us played it, and put in a marathon play that lasted 24 hours. Just because we figured if we ever stop, you know, we're never going to get to play it again. You know, it was the biggest single score play that I've ever been involved in or anyone I know has ever had in one setting. You know, as I say, unfortunately, I can't go into the details of the play, but But, you know, it's just one of those things where you have to be out there and looking and keep your eyes open and think outside the box. And sometimes really good things come along.
Do you remember how you found it?
Well, yeah, I was walking through the casino and, you know, I saw a situation and, you know, I
jumped on it.
Well, no, I couldn't jump on it immediately. It was something that actually required some analysis. And, you know, so I called somebody who was like, wow, this is going to be really good. And it was. But the most profitable one that I was ever involved in, I didn't find. I actually, in 1986, I was playing with a group of guys, and Alan Woods, who's featured in my book, and who was the guy who really got me involved in playing blackjack professionally, called me up and he said, hey, I have a game. I want you to go play, you know, and we'll split the money or whatever. And I said, well, you know, I'm really kind of involved with this team, you know, and I can't really go play something without them. I have a commitment to them. And he said, well, how about, you know, you all go play it. And, you know, he said, whatever your bankroll is, you know, I'll double it. And, you know, bet twice as much and I'll take half the action. And, you know, so I said, okay. And this was, as I said, this was 1986 and it was Korea basically had a game that was advantage off the top. And this goes back to us talking about, you know, having friends, you know, and, you know, Alan lived in Hong Kong and he had been over playing in Korea and found this game. And after he couldn't play it anymore, he called me. So, you know, we started playing it. And I realized at one point I was over there, I think on my second trip, the limit was about 3,000 US. And there were a ton of card counters playing there. Most of them Caucasians, but there were some Chinese from Hong Kong, and some Malaysians. Somehow they had gotten word that if you didn't bet more than $200, the casino wouldn't throw you out. And, I went and we didn't want to bet $200. I mean, expenses to Korea are high. And, I went in one day and there were, I counted, I went through the casino counting and I counted 40 guys that were all there betting up to a max of two hands of 200. And I went back and I called my teammates and I said, this is just not going to go on. They're not going to, you can't sustain this. 40 guys who are all making a living playing 8 or 10 hours a day. So we kind of strategized at that point and decided that what we would do is recruit Japanese as big players because Japan hadn't crashed yet and all of the big action in Korea was coming from the Japanese. Here's the another thing that's important. You know, teams, different people on teams serve different functions. And some guys are good at running numbers and other guys are good at pounding the pavement and scouting. But one of the things that really a team needs is the guy who gets things done. Because a lot of times team members will sit around and come up with ideas and say, oh, we could do this, we could do that. But you need a guy who actually will push it through, will actually, you know, take the ball and run with it and make it happen. In our case, it was my partner, Daryl. You know, so we came up with this idea of getting Japanese big players. And he, you know, started running ads in Japanese newspapers and interviewing people. And I had been doing shows for Japan, dance shows. So I had some contacts. And anyway, we ended up, you know, getting our Japanese big players. And in the meantime, on this day they called Bloody Sunday, the casino came through and barred all of those guys who were betting up to $200 max. They all got thrown out. And, you know, we started playing with our Japanese big players. And, you know, we lasted 3 years.
So you were playing like $5 and your big player was playing close to max?
Not close to max. He was betting two hands of 3,000, yeah.
And you were playing $5 and giving him signals or something of that
nature?
Yeah,
exactly. We would tell him exactly, you know, how much to bet and how to play each hand. And really, what happened was there was a casino flea, this degenerate player who figured it out eventually after 3 years. He figured out that it was always the white guy at the table with the Japanese guy, and he went to one of our Japanese players and in the restaurant and said he really needed a loan, and intimated that he knew that the Japanese player was with us, and that if our player didn't give him, I think he wanted $10,000 or something, you know, he was going to rat us out to the casino. And, you know, our guy basically said, I don't know what you're talking about. And but suddenly the casino came and tried to bar him. So I believe we got ratted out by this degenerate guy. And initially what happened was our big player got very angry and told them that he had friends who owned the television station in Tokyo, and he was going to go to the newspapers and they would never get another Japanese player. And the bosses backed down immediately and said that, no, it wasn't that he was barred. It's just that he couldn't bet so much. So they limited him from 3,000 max to 1,000 max, three hands of 1,000.
Well, that's still playable.
Yeah, so that was okay. And that was only one of our big players. But then I think what happened was they figured out what was actually going on. And they started barring, you know, the Caucasians. So that was probably the best project I was involved with. And, you know, it was over $1 million out of one casino in Seoul, plus another $500,000 at the other casinos around Korea.
Was there any chance of training some of the Japanese to do what you do, so they could continue with?
There was one who kind of took it on himself to learn. And this guy was the greatest BP ever. We loaned him to Tommy Hyland at one point. We took him to Poland with us. This guy won millions of dollars. And not that we needed him to learn, but he, as I say, he took it on himself.
So could he take the show on the road without you?
I think he was playing. He didn't really have a big bankroll. I don't know how he did as an individual. I guess he turned into a competent card counter.
Interesting. All right. Now, it's happened that in this example, some of my best scouting finds have been when I've been on somebody else's dime. So there's two reasons for that. One is the finding things outside of Vegas there's more outside of Vegas than in Vegas. And the other is I don't do enough scouting for myself. So I somehow do not enjoy scouting. And even though I know it is profitable, I know it's something when I do it, good things happen and I find out things and good opportunities, but I'm not the best scouter. So I know that about myself. And so when I run out of plays, I start scouting again.
Seems like you should team up with a scout.
Yeah, so now at various times in your life, you've hired scouts or some or had some kind of an arrangement with a scout who would find something and then notify you somehow. And there would be some kind of compensation in this. Now, I assume you're always looking for competent scouts who want to send you information for a referral fee. So if there's any...
You know, it's true and it isn't. I mean, because most of what people find is stuff I'm not interested in. You know, I have no interest at all in a blackjack card counting game with good penetration or good rules. You know, it just... so most of the scout, for me, it's a lot different. I mean, video poker is pretty straightforward, but what I'm interested in, most people, you know, aren't really going to find what I'm interested in. I mean, sometimes they are.
Okay. Surprisingly, video poker is not as straightforward as what you suggest.
Oh, really?
It's not the game itself. Usually, it's the promotions that go with it, and finding the promotions and recognizing that the promotions are good enough is an art. Now, my most recent example of somebody doing that, I wrote about him. His name was Jeffrey Warren Toll. He ripped me off for quite a bit, and I outed him rather nastily on my blog. If any of you have a chance to avoid Jeffrey Warren Toll, I recommend you take that opportunity. Because like that was a situation in near Pennsylvania, and I wouldn't have no idea that it was there, but it was a 8-hour promotion that was probably worth $1,000 an hour. And,
you know, it's a really interesting question. How to compensate people for those kind of things. Uh-huh. And usually the kind of thing that I'm interested in is someone who will take, you know, a percentage of the win or the loss. You know what I mean? Like if I give something to somebody and say, here, why don't you go play this? I'm willing to put up money and take a percentage of the loss if I'm also taking a percentage of the win. So because of that, I'm usually only going to give those situations to someone I know pretty well.
Yeah, there's a limited number of people you're going to give, you know, $20,000 to and say, let me know how it comes out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Real limited number. All right, so that's going to be it for this week. Thank you, Richard. I enjoyed your stories. I hope our listeners enjoyed both of our stories.
I just want to remind our listeners to, you know, go to facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge and, you know, submit your questions. And we're going to, in show coming up next week, I think, we're going to have Bobner Session. So, yeah, send us your questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or at the Facebook page.
Very good.
Yeah, we always like to hear from you.
All right. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.